Today on Annenberg Radio News.
10 days.
10天.
10 days.
10 días.
10 yamim.
Aujourd'hui es la 10.
It's the 10th day of the government shutdown, but there seems to be hope yet. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 10th, 2013. I am Ryan Bouzion. California is home to about 2 million military veterans, which is the highest number in the nation. Many of those veterans receive assistance from the U.S. government. With the government shutdown now in its 10th day, some are concerned that veterans are at risk of losing out on some of that support. Catherine Davis met with some Los Angeles veterans today.
Andrew Armijo remembers his time in the U.S. Army fondly.
The best five years of my life.
The 20 years since Armijo left the Army have been less rewarding.
When I got out, there wasn't very many jobs. And, you know, it just didn't work. It just, you know, it took a long time to really get back on my feet. And then when I did, the economy fell out.
Armijo has been homeless for the past 5 years. Now he's in school full-time, studying to be a dietitian and getting ready to move into his own apartment. A lot of his turnaround is thanks to veteran assistance programs run by nonprofit groups and the government. With the federal government still shut down, many are becoming concerned that veterans like Armijo might start to feel the impact. Today, Armijo was attending a stand-down veterans event in downtown Los Angeles, hosted by Goodwill Industries. Event organizer Sasha Itzikman says the federal furloughs created challenges.
Unfortunately, the military reserve units that we were partnering with to provide us with showers, washing machines, cots, tents, electricity, those services were no longer available to us, nor was the labor to install it.
Goodwill was preparing to serve as many as 1,000 Los Angeles veterans during the two-day program and hoped that even without the support of some government services, veterans would still show up. The event offered free meals, education programs, and health services. Goodwill has been organizing the event for several months, so it's only a coincidence that it was scheduled during the government shutdown. VA Secretary Eric Shinseki warned lawmakers in Washington, D.C. yesterday that more than 5 million veterans could miss their disability compensation next month if the government shutdown continues. Even though it put a damper on their plans, Goodwill organizers say concerns about the shutdown only made their event more essential. Here's Army veteran and Goodwill employee Johnny Reynoso.
We have our worries, but today we're trying to make it a day of with less worries, a day that a veteran's here to get comfort.
Reynoso says challenges that veterans like him face can last years. And in the grand scheme of things, he says the government shutdown is hopefully just temporary. Catherine Davis, Annenberg Radio News.
John Boehner says the GOP would be willing to extend the government budget for 6 more weeks, but in exchange for that, he wants negotiations on making modest changes to Obamacare and cuts to federal program funding. The White House says President Obama is open to accepting Boehner's proposal, but that the president will not offer concessions during talks with the GOP. Gallup poll shows that the Republican Party's approval is at 28%, a record low. Today is the 10th day since the government shutdown began, and people are starting to point fingers. Encouraging news about the Los Angeles River. A report released by the Council for Watershed Health finds that the condition of the water isn't too bad. It's encouraging, right? Ashley Wong tells us about the study.
The report included a 5-year assessment of 1,400 miles of streams from the San Gabriel Mountains to the Pacific Ocean.
We're here today at Deaton Auditorium, a full-day conference on the state of the Los Angeles River watershed.
Nancy Steele, the executive director of the Council for Watershed Health, shared what the council looks for when evaluating the health of the watershed.
The occasion, the event, is 5 years of monitoring of the health of the watershed, where we've looked at everything from the state of the streams and tributaries to the LA River watershed to is it safe to fish and eat those fish? Is it safe to swim?
The current report states the pressures of urbanization have resulted in a loss of habitat and human access to the rivers. In addition, the report also states that non-point source contributions, such as urban runoff, have dramatically changed the natural hydrology of the rivers. Steele added that the council will also make use of this report to picture what the future of the watershed will be like. Ashley Wong, Annenberg Radio News.
Tomorrow is National Coming Out Day, which celebrates those who publicly identify as members of the LGBT community. Leaders of LA Unified School District and the LA Gay and Lesbian Center met to show their support for students. Law Murray has the story.
Students at Miguel Contreras Learning Complex near downtown Los Angeles joined the LA Gay and Lesbian Center and LAUSD Superintendent John Daisy to announce the Out for Safe Schools initiative.
This is about LAUSD being very clear and having an unambiguous message that it is safe to be you. We are proud of who you are and that our campuses don't want tolerance, we want acceptance.
Thousands of LAUSD members will wear new rainbow badges to create a safe space for LGBT students and their allies. Assistant Superintendent Earl Perkins spoke to members of the Student Gay Straight Alliance at Contreras.
The badges that you see are being distributed to every school in our district, so our families know that we are here to support and affirm their beliefs. As Superintendent Daisy stated in his PSA, you can be you. In LAUSD.
The badges would have been a welcome sight for Alan Acosta of the LA Gay and Lesbian Center. He grew up in the school district. He says as a gay student in the 1960s, it would have been outside the realm of possibility there will be adults who would support him in school.
But here I am today, in front of all of you, out, proud, and smack dab in the middle of one of LA Unified's flagship schools.
In the midst of Anti-Bullying Month, this initiative was developed by the Gay and Lesbian Center's Project SPIN, which stands for Suicide Prevention Intervention Now.
We are so proud that through the center's partnership with LAUSD, Project SPIN is helping to create a whole new culture on school campuses, a culture and environment where all kids feel safe and welcome.
Students from the school's Social Alliance section were encouraged by the publicity of the event. Kelsey, a junior and president of the school's Gay Straight Alliance, says that at Contreras, they stand together.
We don't want them to feel alone, you get me? We want them to feel at peace, calm, you know, let them be themselves, you know, not act as another person that they're really not.
LAUSD estimates that nearly 11% of its students identify as LGBT. In the nation's second largest school district, a day like today could be highly influential and inspiring to youth across the country. Law Murray, Annenberg Radio News.
We all know high school isn't what it used to be, as phone calls have been largely replaced by texting and Facebook. Many schools have tried to stop social media use, but one school in South LA is trying to figure out how to productively incorporate social media and the internet. Danielle Tarasuk is at Augustus Hawkins High School with the story.
The ninth graders at Augustus Hawkins High School in South LA don't secretly play computer games. The teachers encourage them to play. These teens took part in the Community Planet program by the Engagement Lab out of Emerson College. The students play a computer game that asks them about how to improve their community.
It's doing research while playing a game and then helping certain causes that students want to help.
That's Andre Hargunani, a principal at Augustus Hawkins High School. He says the game not only raised money and was educational, but it opened up a conversation about social media in their school. Students at Augustus Hawkins High School have different attitudes about social media use at school.
Most teens are afraid to say what they feel in person, so they do it online.
I don't think school is a place for social media. We don't need to have Facebook available at school. We don't need to have YouTube, anything.
One main concern that administrators have is cyberbullying. For that and other reasons, most social media sites are blocked district-wide. Danny Holm is the social media manager for LAUSD.
Social media access is on campus using LAUSD equipment, going through our equipment. So things like Facebook are blocked. And other social media tools that have been determined to be useful for a classroom purpose are unblocked on a case-by-case basis or generally.
Holm also says LAUSD is actively looking for new ways to incorporate social media.
District is busily implementing the Common Core Technology Project, which involves a lot of digital learning on every level. So although that is in its first phase and is still being developed in some ways on a curricular level, digital learning, of which social media is to which social media is connected will be more and more important as time goes on.
Until the district figures out how to handle social media, it's up to Augustus Hawkins High School to chart their own path. Danielle Tarasuk, Annenberg Radio News.
Get ready to take off those sweaters and scarves. This weekend will give us a slight break from the cold weather with sunny skies and temperatures in the mid-70s. Temperatures are expected to continue to rise into the low 80s early next week. Later on Annenberg Radio News, we hear from an astronaut who flew on Apollo 7. Los Angeles Fire Department Chief Brian Cummings will be stepping down. Mayor Garcetti says Cummings will retire from the department in February. The fire department has been accused of misreporting 911 response times, having inconsistent response times in different neighborhoods, and for maintaining a faulty data system. The mayor appointed former fire captain James Featherstone as acting chief as of November 1st. Firefighters are still investigating what caused a fire that destroyed the Crouch Memorial Church in South L.A. Stephanie Monti visited the scene today and has this report.
Burnt fragments of wood and stained glass are all that remain after the fire destroyed Crouch Memorial Church of God in Christ. Today, construction workers sawed off what was left of the roofless structure. The Los Angeles Fire Department continued its evaluation of Tuesday's fire that injured three firefighters. Chief Legal of the Battalion 1 unit revisited the scene today.
I'm taking a look at it myself, just to take a look at the damage. Heard about the fire, came by just to take a look.
Damage from the fire was extensive and parts of the building collapsed altogether. Tom Howard, who owns a business in the neighborhood, says it could have been worse.
I think everybody's lucky that, I mean, even the adjoining residences aren't even damaged. So credit obviously to the fire department.
The historic church was originally built in the late 1800s and has been central to the West Adams community. Jose Alvarez lives on the same block as the church. He was home when the fire first started.
It's done with. It's done with that church. It's been there for so long. I mean, we've lived here about 40 years in this neighborhood and we've seen this church. We grew up, looking at the church. I mean, this is pretty sad.
Inspection records show the building was in compliance with fire codes. Fire Department spokesman Brian Humphrey says it appeared to be accidental. However, no official cause of the fire has been reported. Neighbors and parishioners say they hope and pray they can rebuild. At this point, the church hasn't determined where it will hold Mass on Sunday. Stephanie Monti, Annenberg Radio News.
While Yosemite was unfortunate enough to be closed on its birthday, the downtown Grand Park will get to celebrate its one-year anniversary. Logan Healy has the story.
The anniversary for Grand Park is set for tonight, but it sounds like some people are starting a little bit early. Angelenos have been trickling into the park throughout the day for their midday breaks as event organizers set up. Less than 5 years ago, the park was an abandoned lot. County employee Sybil McMiller says she was at the park's opening a year ago.
I've seen all the dancers wearing bright colors, going through the fountain, just dancing around. And this is a great park, it's for the people of Los Angeles.
All sorts of people. There was a mix of parents playing with their kids, workers on lunch break, and even jurors on recess. Grand Park Director Lucas Regara says he's looking forward to the celebration.
We're going to have Sprinkles Cupcakes out here who graciously partnered with us to create a one-year Grand Park strawberry cupcake for our one-year anniversary.
The party kicks off tonight at 7 p.m. in the park. Event organizers say get there early if you want to get a bite of the special cupcake. Logan Healy, Annenberg Radio News.
The Nobel Prize Committee has awarded the prize for literature to Alice Munro of Canada. Bridget Mullins is the executive director of USC's Masters of Professional Writing program. She says the award is a big win for the genre of short stories and for women.
Women are always central in her stories, and also that she writes short stories and not novels. There's a kind of humility and a lack of pyrotechnics, and it's all done with such exquisite technique. So it's a wonderful day for writers, and I think especially for women writers.
Munro joins the ranks of past Nobel laureates such as Steinbeck and Hemingway. She is the 13th woman to receive the award. Tomorrow marks the 45th anniversary of the Apollo 7 space mission. It was the first Apollo mission to carry a crew into orbit and the first to transmit live television broadcasts back to Earth. I spoke earlier with Walt Cunningham, an astronaut from the famous 1968 mission. How are you doing today?
Well, considering it's 45 years since we had that liftoff, I think I'm doing rather well.
Now, speaking of that date, is there any one particular memory that sticks out to you that really encapsulates how you were feeling that day?
We were only anxious that they not find something to cancel the mission at the last minute. And I can remember we were a little bit irritated. We took off 2 minutes and 56 seconds late, and we didn't think it was necessary to have had that hold. So that's just the way we were in those days. We were so prepared, and it turns out in the long run it was probably the greatest spacecraft, you know, ever to recover from a fire, things like that.
What is being in space like?
Well, being in space, especially when you read about it now or you see it in the movies, there's a lot of initiative and time that people have to do things. In the real world, especially back in those days, 45 years ago, we were so wrapped up in what we had to do that there was little time to just kind of think or absorb it or, you know, really find fully enjoyment. So we were basically busy the whole time, although they front-end load a mission. We were set out to be an 11-day mission. Not one of us thought that things would be working well enough so we'd actually do the 11 days. And so the engineers on the ground, they all put as much of their tests as they can in the beginning. So by the time it's half over, 60% over, you've probably accomplished 75-80% of what your objectives are. So you get a little bit of time at the end. But it turns out that the spacecraft that Rockwell, North American Rockwell at the time built, recovering from the fire that destroyed the last attempt, it was the cleanest spacecraft that you can possibly imagine. And in fact, today, 45 years later, it's still the longest, the most ambitious, the most successful first engineering flight of any new machine ever.
So 45 years ago, when I hear people talk about those times, they speak on space travel as if it kind of represented a little bit of the American sensibility of just dreaming big and the whole idea of space being a frontier that could be anything, and that representing America being able to do anything, you know, no ceilings. How do you feel today that we view space?
Well, as I look back then, there's no question that it was a lot of politically driven between us and the Russians. And today we have to look back and look at that as the golden age of manned spaceflight.
If you'd like to hear more of my interview with astronaut Walt Cunningham, visit AnnenbergRadio.org. Now here's a tale from a bleeding edge of modern media, web television. Travis Ritchie is about to kick off the second season of his online video series, and Angie Sutton spoke to him about plowing ahead on the project, despite cries of copyright violation from Sony.
It's one of the most unwieldy titles of a show ever. Untitled web series about a space traveler who can also travel in time. But the name of the show is drenched in almost as much history as the show it's a spoof of, Doctor Who. Co-writer and star Travis Ritchie had originally been cast as the character of Inspector Spacetime for a small bit in the sitcom community. He started discussing the idea of networks doing supplemental content, like web-based episodes for The Office and Heroes. He went through the proper channels of submitting the script and heard nothing.
I decided to basically say, you know, to fans, I said, if you guys want this badly enough, fund it and we'll know it's worth making. And they did. The news exploded that we were working on an Inspector Spacetime web series, and we managed to raise $25,000. And it was about halfway through that funding that I got a call from a Sony lawyer. Just one phone call. It wasn't a cease and desist order. It wasn't anything. Just one call where she said, you know, you need to shut this project down. And I told her, basically, no, I don't, because everything in the web series was completely original except for the title and the look of the main character. And I'd done a lot of research, you know, before embarking on this mission, and you can't copyright a title, and nobody had a trademark. Nobody had bothered to trademark Inspector Spacetime. And as far as the look of the character, that bowler hat and trench coat look, you can't copyright either because it's seen on fare, I believe is what it's called. It's just stuff that appears in everyday life. You can't copyright a telephone, you know? But I said, you know, I don't want to fight. And so we titled it Untitled Web Series About a Space Traveler Who Can Also Travel Through Time.
Ritchie already had a history with producing content for the web before launching Untitled Web Series and has faith that the medium is only going to get better.
The reason that web series are so important, or web television as I like to call it, is that the barrier for entry is so low. We are creative people and we need to be creative. And if you wait for a studio to buy your script or a TV show to greenlight your project or a network to, you know, to put you on the air, you'll be waiting for the rest of your life.
This is Angie Fiedler-Sutton, Annenberg Radio News.
The government shutdown isn't the only thing that's got people feeling emotional lately. A rush of new bands playing a distinctly more emo brand of rock are making waves in SoCal. Andy Vizoyan has more. Never mind that. Let's talk USC football. We're now only a few hours away from the first non-Thanksgiving weekday home game in SC football history. Evan Budrovich explains the hype surrounding tonight's contest.
Strap it up, folks. It's game day here on the USC campus.
One day Coliseum rock and heart. We walk out there to get this band rolling. This game, the rest of the 8 games of this season, was good. They deserve the best. We love you. Number one fan in the world. Fight on.
The fan base has been waiting for winning football to return to SC, and guys like Skipper believe it could all change tonight.
I think it just shows a really good attitude. I think a lot of stuff Coach O has been telling the team and telling the community is really good and positive vibes about the team. I'm excited for the next 8 games.
Players are approaching this Thursday night contest with a clean slate, looking to begin a new era with a dominant display of football.
We can't wait to get back on the field and show what this team is all about. A new opportunity under Coach O, and we're excited. We're going to bring a whole new kind of energy. We want everybody to bring that same energy. Let's get the Coliseum rocking like we used to. Fight on.
Senior captain Devon Kennard says it best when he believes Trojan fans should embrace the energy from their players tonight. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
And now we're going to go live to our reporter Denise Guerra, who is out at the tailgate in Exposition Park. Denise, what is it like down there?
Well, it's pretty quiet. Not really quiet. Actually, there's a lot going on. There's people playing beer pong and, you know, the usual type of tailgate stuff. But I think the biggest difference today, you know, it's the first Thursday home game and the first game that's not on campus. So that's been really tough for some people who aren't used to tailgating over near the stadium. People that have been tailgating next to the stadium are fine. They're totally fine with everything. But logistically, yeah, there's been some people who are kind of frustrated by how this has turned out.
Are people more or less excited for today's prospects?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a Thursday night, and some people have told me they feel it's like a school night, which it is. You know, they go to campus, all they see is backpacks, and they're really just they're used to people partying all day, and they're not seeing as much of that today because of what's happening. But from who I've talked to, the consensus is that they're excited Kiffin is out, and they can't wait to see what Orgeron has to offer for this game.
All right. Thank you so much, Denise.
Thanks.
Now we're going to go to that story about emo rock. Here is Andy Vazoyan.
I am Chris. I play drums.
I am Hank, and I am a human.
I'm Tim. That's all.
Those three voices are the guys behind TTNG, sitting in the breezy smoking patio outside the Constellation Room in Santa Ana. If you came up to ask them what type of music they play, you're not likely to get an easy answer.
For us, we'd never really put a label on our music, I don't think so.
Although that might not sound like the best way to present yourself, the band actually has the right idea. After all, bands like TTNG have to deal with the stigma of being called emo bands.
I think emo is a dirty word. I typed it into Tumblr the other day, and what came out was pretty dirty.
For me, emo is a dirty word.
For the unfamiliar, emo was music born in the Midwest in the 90s, featuring thoughtful, emotionally available lyrics. It only hit the mainstream in the early 2000s, and it brought with it stores like Hot Topic, that specifically catered to that type of crowd. After years of success, the whole movement started to crumble under its own weight, and a few years later, people moved on. But there are still bands playing those kinds of songs, and writing those kinds of lyrics.
The word emo has been bastardized and kind of no longer really means what it used to people that like that kind of music.
Now, it doesn't really mean anything other than a collection of stereotypes. And that's part of the problem for bands like TTNG. What makes them different, however, is that they're putting on a little bit of an edge. They're not just about the lyrics, they also play a harder sound, what some people call math rock.
Basically, it's overplaying your instrument as much as possible, trying to just show off and make it look as impressive as possible.
Math rock really is about playing your instrument in a different way. Most modern rock songs are played with stable drum beats and straightforward guitars. Math rock makes things way more complicated, changing musical timing and generally making a less conventional sound. It also helps songs feel more aggressive. For a band like TTNG, sounding like you can rock a stage is crucial. But none of that matters if no one listens to the music, because all they hear is the word emo.
These kind of genre classifications aren't real. People just make music. and we are definitely that case.
The next few years will show whether bands like TTNG will be able to move back onto a grander stage. A genre revival is coming, just don't call it emo.
Andy Vasoyan, Annenberg Radio News.
All right, that's it for this Thursday. We had help from Julian De Ocampo, Jacob Ellenhorn, Logan Healy, Matthew Tinoco, Ashley Wong, Victor Figueroa was on the boards, Graham Clark produces our arts and culture segment, and the newscast producer is the one and only Jerome Campbell. Our executive producer is the great Catherine Davis, and for all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Ryan Bouzion. Stay classy, LA, and go SC.